So when we started this machine, we looked around and said, well, what should it look like? Not from a physical point of view, but internally, what should it look like? How should we put it together? How should we make it up? And we looked around, and of course, the scientific machines at that time were all 36-bit or 18-bit machines, or a combination thereof. For some very good reasons, because 18 bits or 36 bits allowed you to do some very powerful things in terms of an instruction set. In addition to that, both numbers were divisible by an integer of 6, which meant you could place a number of binary-coded decimal characters within those numbers, 3 binary-coded decimals in 18 bits and 6 in 36 bits. So we said, well, that must be the design point that we want to work from. So we started designing the machine as an 18-bit machine in hardware and an 18/36-bit machine in software. It also gave us what we felt was the best floating point option when we developed the floating point routines. And we actually built a prototype. In fact, the prototype looked very much like a PC. It was a box that was about this long, about this wide, about this high. And that was in early 63.
What kind of technology could you get in there?
We built our own.
Discrete transistors.
We used discrete transistors and diodes. It was a very efficient logic that we developed. And that was our prototype. But then, of course, other things were happening around us. At that point in time, IBM had made a major decision to consolidate all of the different architectures that were then in play, the 700 series, the 7000 series, the 1400 series that were all being produced for some very, today, obvious reasons. First of all, how many different machines can you support? Because each one of them divides the market up. Each one of them requires training. Each one of them requires unique software. And software was becoming the dominant factor. In the early days, machines were shipped without software, and the customers built the software. I remember the 650. Does anyone remember the 650? Yes. The 650 drum machine, 2,000 words. SOAP 2. That was the first machine I ever programmed. In San Francisco, by the way. But that machine, you basically, you wrote the program yourself. It was a batch machine no operating system. But as technology developed, operating systems were required. They were becoming more and more and more and more complex. So it was clear that something had to happen. Underneath that, the technology moving along, moving into integrated circuits, IBM made a major, major decision. And it was driven by a man by the name of Bob Evans, Bo Evans we called him. He said, we should put all these architectures together, we should have only one architecture. He assembled a team of architects that was headed up by a person by the name of Fred Brooks. You recognize the name.
These people are both fellows of the museum.
Are they? Know him very well. Well, Bo Evans, of course, has passed on. Fred Brooks went to North Carolina, University of North Carolina, wrote a book, The Mythical Man Month, because of what happens when you start designing software. In terms of your ability to forecast how long it's going to take to design software. No one ever hits a schedule for some reason or other. A couple of other people who were on the architectural committee, a fellow by the name of Gene Amdahl, and another fellow you probably don't recognize, a fellow by the name of Jerry Blau. who created something called the Blaubox, which was instrumental in building the first timeshare machine that that IBM had. Anyway, these guys were developing the architecture for something that, of course, became the System 360. Now, IBM doesn't like to deal with a lot of different things. It likes uniformity, structure that is consistent. But in moving forward with the System 360, what happened with that within IBM was really quite amazing. It was decided that every single factory would develop product which was unique to System 360. The whole technology base of the company was going to change to integrated circuit technology, flip chip technology, the little aluminum hat modules. It was an enormous capital expenditure that the company was making. In fact, for the first time in its history, IBM had to go outside for capital to be able to afford the cost of converting every single plant in the company all at once for all one product line that was going to be introduced all at the same time. It was a tremendous undertaking. Well, here I was in San Jose doing something that was totally different. It didn't correspond to something that was the heart of a System 360 architecture, which is the byte, an 8-bit byte. And so one day, a horde descended upon us in San Jose and said, we have to do something about this. And as a result, we sat down and we scratched our heads and we looked at alternatives and we concluded that, yes, we could modify the architecture. And so instead of having an 18-bit machine, we would have a 16-bit machine. And we found a way to modify the addressing structure so that we could get effectively 64K of addressing, if you will, 16-bit addressing. Effectively, in addition to having the opcodes, we found a way to do that and do that reasonably efficiently so that we didn't lose too much on the intrinsic performance of the basic instruction set, but we would get the benefit of data compatibility with what was coming out as a System 360. It was a huge event because we basically had to reset and start almost all over again.
Did you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement?
Well, as part of that step, I also became a member of the 360 Architectural Committee. And I guess that was a way of trying to make sure that I stayed on the straight and narrow and didn't depart too much from the spoken word. So that was a major step in our evolution.